you're hearing this before listening to the weekly show, are you sure you meant to do that? If not, stop now and go do that first.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
One thing about the Extra Large, can we, and again, asking you to do all this stuff, because I do fuck all after I hang up, I have to acknowledge that.
And fuck all beforehand.
Yeah.
I do plenty before.
How many phones have you got to give away?
How many phones have I given away historically?
Two.
How many phones am I giving away? Three, depending on how you want to look at it.
But what was I going to say? Can we, because some people only download the most recent.
Yeah.
So put the XL, load it up before, I guess.
Yeah.
So put the release date earlier than the actual.
Yeah, I see exactly what you're saying, and I've already thought of it, and I hope that I get it right. Cool. It's all a little bit experimental. We are now in the XL show.
Because it was the other way around on the Barcamp special, the regular episode then the Barcamp.
Yeah, I know. And that was loaded up as a separate document. The XL, I'm actually going to put it in the same post.
You think that'll work? So two enclosures?
I don't know if it'll work. It's experimental.
We'll see.
The software is meant to support it. I don't know what iTunes will do. And it could be a monumental cock-up. Your cock-up, my ass.
That's great tradition. Line. That's back to episode one, isn't it?
Episode zero, one, two, one from 0 to 25, and then season two, episodes 0 to 10, all cock-ups. Cock-ups left, right, and centre.
My ass, yep.
Yep. All right, well, given that when... it's a bit hard for me to experiment. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I will try and get it right. Maybe this week it won't be right. But if it's not right this week, then hopefully next week it will be right.
That's fantastic. I love the new show, Morgan, the new format, and I congratulate you on your effort.
I need to sort out the levels a little bit because it's maybe a bit quiet. Maybe I should make it loud enough that it really cuts through. But, you know, we'll see.
And should we tighten up the Fast Five? Fast Five plus chat.
Oh, it's all right. We gotta keep it to a reasonable.
I think we could talk
about it a wee bit.
Yeah, we could live with that.
Okay.
Maybe starting the Fast Five a little bit sooner. Maybe the Fast Five should be, I don't know. We'll see.
And we each get to choose a number up to five.
Yeah.
Okay. And the Norway thing had a special place this time, and maybe that will happen occasionally where it's kind of special edition. Yeah. Pre-Fast Five, otherwise it's straight into Fast Five.
And with the stories that we want to give a bit more time to, I mean, I say that we can probably get through Fast Five, the Word of the Week, the Toot Bag and the Corrections, all in 30 minutes. So that gives us another 30 minutes to talk.
Yeah. Now, to be fair, I should also say this might be my last for a few weeks because in theory there's a baby turning up any time now.
Oh, that's so exciting. That's so exciting.
Hugely exciting. So, yeah, okay, that's cool. And, yeah, if there's only two of us, then it makes it easier.
It's so bad when there's two of us. We need to try and... Robin hasn't been able to join because she's been doing all this film festival stuff. We'll find extras.
Guests.
We'll find extras.
We need to get some guests back on. What's going on with economies?
We haven't had a guest in ages.
The guests that I vaguely mentioned it to on Twitter, who I think would be interested, who would be interesting, Gareth, what's his
Gareth's
name?
Gareth's keen, isn't he? Yes.
Yep. Yeah, he's already said that he'll do it. He'll do bloody anything.
And Paul Brislin.
He'll turn up to the opening of a fridge.
Paul Brislin, I just discovered, works the next street over from me. I met him at the bloody mechanic, the local mechanic, dropping off my car. And there was Paul Brislin moping about like a fucking Two Ends employee.
He does, he mopes.
So I'll hit him up next time I see him on the street.
Yeah, I'm keen to have both of them on. We haven't had a guest in a long time. Maybe we can get back to having a guest every now and then. I'd also quite like to do a live show again soon. Ultimately, if we could get it right, I'd quite like to stream it live every time, but only if none of us actually has to operate the streamy bit or look at the chat room, because I found it incredibly distracting. Okay, now there were some stories, if you guys are happy to continue, within the extra large. The extra large could be only 5 minutes long.
I'm gonna call it a night, actually.
Let me do two things. Oh, come on.
What might happen if you go?
That's fine. You can yan and fucking waffle as much as you want and now that it's in a separate show, I'm happy with that.
All right, let me do one more thing before you leave, because it's technology, it's gadgetry. This is about the 13-inch Core i7 MacBook Air. It seems like it is actually properly fast, like properly fast. Before, even though it was a dirty old Core 2 Duo, the same processor as released in the first MacBook Air in like 2007, now it's actually properly fast, not just because it has an SSD, but because it has a fast processor.
It's a Core i7 with an SSD. It'll be stonking.
Absolutely. Now, the screen is still a bit low resolution, but this is probably the only laptop in the world that I'm actually properly interested in.
What do they want for it? What's the money?
Well, actually, this isn't the 13-inch Core i7. This is just the base price of the bottom-end one, I guess, which in New Zealand is $1,549. I guess that's the 11-inch. Yep. And that'll be a Core i5 or a Core i3. I don't know. Anyway,
five.
But probably. So it's $1,549 at the New Zealand Apple Store. It's $999 at the Apple Store.
Hang on, let me just write this down. $999
divided
by 0.87. It's $1,150.
So
now,
how
plus
are
GST,
they
plus GST?
Oh, fuck, hang on.
Times 1.15.
What was that? 1150. What's the GST? There's no times
1.15. 15%.
So it's still $200 or $300 more than it should be, right?
1322. Yeah. What are they asking for it?
$1,549. I heard that something about Apple. Apparently, internally, the international business divisions like buy currency from one another or buy trading. By trade with one another, on set rates at set dates.
Yeah, they hedge.
Yeah, so basically they set a rate and then they exchange a bunch of credit notes with each other, and so that's why it costs whatever it costs for a period of time, and they can't adapt to the exchange rate. But everyone does that.
But like, so if it stays at 87 cents for another 3 or 6 months, or continues to rise, which I think there's a good chance of, hopefully the New Zealand Apple Store will rejig their pricing, but I wouldn't hold your breath. I think that they're going to hold it up for as long as they can.
The one thing that really pisses me off, because I'd be all over one of these MacBook Airs if I had the money, but the other thing, the fact that they restrict the upgrading to an i7 based on the size of the SSD.
Is that right?
Well, you see, look, so the 13-inch 128 gigabyte can't be upgraded to an i7.
Yeah.
But the 13-inch 256 gigabyte can be.
Right.
There's no difference between them. It's stupid.
That's fucking yeah.
It's tricky. Apple's I guess they don't want to have an unlimited number of SKUs. But now another thing that I'd just like to point out is that thanks to the Thunderbolt port, if you have the new 27-inch monitor, which is a lovely display, but unfortunately, even though that also I think is $1,000 US, but here again, I think it's about I haven't looked it up. I don't want to guess $1,700. Let's say that. If you have the Thunderbolt port, then that gives you. It's basically a dock. And so it can have gigabit Ethernet. It can have 3 USB devices. And it can even have FireWire in it. And all you need to connect to your little MacBook is one Thunderbolt cable.
Pretty cool.
Pretty fucking cool.
Thunderbolt's the new optical USB or something? Or?
No, it's not USB. At this stage.
It's not USB.
It's PCI.
The new USB, obviously, is USB 3. And I like USB 3 just fine. But this does a different job. And I don't think people should think of this as being even a competitor to USB 3. Frankly, I think that on the back of that 27-inch, they should have USB 3 ports, for instance.
It is literally a PCI bus expansion, basically. It's PCI Express. Cool. I think it's a 4-lane PCI Express.
What's a bit asked? There's no USB 3 then.
Yeah. There's no reason it couldn't be. The connection is, but they're daisy chainable as well, so you could potentially get, and I don't know if one exists yet, but one will exist, a Thunderbolt USB 3 converter, and then you'd basically daisy chain it through. Right. So it carries, I think the Thunderbolt protocol carries a 4-lane PCI Express. It carries power at the moment, and I think it also carries a DisplayPort or a DVI signal. I think that's separate to the PCI, so it doesn't rely on the monitor. It sends a video signal as well as sending a PCI bus.
Right.
So, okay. But in theory, in future, you could also have a monitor that has a built-in you know, essentially a graphics card in the monitor, although you'd need a 16-way for that, and that's not available yet. But you could essentially have a monitor that has a graphics card built in itself.
It's friggin' cool, man. It's so friggin' cool.
It's not like any sort of expansion that we're used to, though. It's not like USB. It's not like FireWire. It's not like anything like that, because it's not a data connection. It's a bus connection. Yeah. So it requires that the other end thing that's plugging into have all the controller stuff that it needs.
And
so
actually...
A Thunderbolt hard drive, for instance, has to have a SATA controller inside it.
Right. So the devices will all be more expensive. But that does open up wonderful possibilities, particularly for the MacBook Air. The one component, I think, that remains in the MacBook Air that is under spec, aside from the resolution of the display, is the video card. It's just got some shitty onboard Intel, which is not... I mean, and it shares memory with the main system.
It's not a gaming machine, though.
Well, only because of that video card, though. But if you do, as Dylan suggests, you can have a video card in the monitor, then you can have your flash-ass GPU in your big 27-inch display. And so when you plug your Thunderbolt port in, suddenly it outsources the video processing.
I think only possible in a couple of revisions. Like they've got a roadmap forward for Thunderbolt, or as Intel calls it, because Intel invented it, I think, Lightpeak.
Yeah.
The next version is also fiber optic, not copper.
Yeah.
So it won't carry power anymore, but it will have the capacity to carry more data.
Does it currently carry power? Oh, enough power to spin up a hard drive.
Yeah. So it's power. It's got bus power like FireWire or USB.
I thought that it was a hybrid where there would be a couple of copper lines and the optical.
Oh, I think there might be. I think it might have optical for something else. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't paid that much attention. I've heard about it mainly through video channels where it's. You know, people are interested in it for providing a video I/O device where you can, you know, have your HDMI ins and outs and stuff like that for your high-end video or HDSDI, that sort of stuff.
All right, one more thing, Ben, before you go. This one is right in your wheelhouse. This is Google Plus is now available for iPhone. You know, a little mobile app in the App Store. So now Apple users can also wonder what the hell to use it for. But you know, when they're on the bus, they can wonder what the hell to use it for. Something that hadn't occurred to me, and possibly this is, you know, you guys already had snigged to this, jigged to this, snapped to this. I don't even know what the word is going to be. But the Sting Machine pointed out that it's not Facebook, it's Twitter, Google Plus.
Is it, though?
Is it?
It's more like Twitter.
I find it hard to use it like Twitter or Facebook.
I find it hard to use for anything.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm waiting to be impressed by it. But
me too.
Every time I go there, I look at it and I go, and run away again.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things that they need to do. Number one is change the default view so you can choose which circle to see. Because I don't want to see every post from, you know, all those random people.
No.
Because the thing that I get from Google Plus...
Are you saying they have or they should?
They should.
It's been a feature since like day one.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
Choose a default circle, absolutely.
Because, and the reason I think it's like Twitter is on Facebook, I could probably tell you, given a bit of thought maybe, exactly who everyone is. On Google Plus... I have no idea who most of them are. Because now maybe I'd know them by their Twitter handles, but I don't know their real names. And maybe I've just never met them. Never met them at all. And I don't know why they're following me. But yeah, so it's a very tricky thing. I'd love to be able to interact with everyone who's on there. But I don't know. It doesn't feel... There's something missing. I don't feel it. I've got three
that's,
or four
That's why I turned it off,
because
it was just, you know, maybe when someone explains it to me, I'll come back. But but I just don't want another thing in my life that I need to check and respond and all that crap.
Anyway,
before I chose to have another baby.
We've kept you here long enough, Ben.
Exactly.
So if you want to go.
Night, chaps. Have a good evening.
Thank you once again.
Thank you.
And when you listen to the show on Thursday, you'll probably hear quite a lot of Nyan just intermingled throughout it.
Tough stuff. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
All right. Do we want to do any more extra large, Dills? Any more extra
large? I don't
know.
I just tried to play a music file and I crashed my little music file player thingy, so that's disappointing. I was going to play him out with Hooked on a Feeling by David Hasselhoff.
Oh, you should have played play him out Keyboard Cat.
I can't. I've got nothing. I can't. My music player thing's died.
But you don't. Oh, you. So you can't just go into.
No, I had a special music player that plays through Skype. Anyway. So we're ending this one again, are we?
No, because this is only like a minute long in the okay. full length of the thing. And anyway, it's not annoying. It's just kind of, I mean, the cat is joyful, just absolutely joyful, and or asleep, one or the other.
Who can't be overjoyed by a cat in a t-shirt? The cat's wearing a t-shirt in that video, right?
God, yes, he's wearing a shirt. Is it a t-shirt or is it like a Hawaiian shirt?
Ah, wow.
Good old keyboard cat. Only 17 million views, which actually surprises me. I would have thought it would be more.
It's probably like another couple of duplicates of it on there with a few more, you know, aggregate.
Yep, no, you're right. This is the so-called original, which has got a couple of different keyboard cats on it. Apparently 4,500 people are dickheads. 4,495 dislikes. How can there be so many? How could you dislike keyboard cat?
I'm pretty sure that people dislike on popular YouTube videos just for the irony.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Why would you do it? Why would you do that?
Don't know.
People are dicks.
I know.
Oh, wow. It's a long time since I've heard.
Oh, great.
Okay. This is even worse than a YouTube video sharing session, because the listeners. Chocolate rain. Some stay dry and others feel the pain. I always thought that he looked like a discourse philosopher and cultural marketing commentator or whatever. I always thought he looked a bit like Ryan.
He does. Yeah. Ryan, I think Ryan's a social media douchebag, isn't he?
I don't know what he is now. Whatever he is, he's good at it.
So, shall we talk about poos or something? I don't know.
We're not allowed to talk about poos. There was pretty much universal agreement on only one thing, and that was that we shouldn't talk about poos on Discourse.
Especially, that's fair enough. Obviously, New Zealand already has a number of spectacularly good poo podcasts.
That's right.
And poo casts.
I mean, we poop-casts. Are clearly poop cast. I like it. Maybe we should. We missed a beat by choosing Discourse when we could have chosen poop cast. We'd probably have more international listeners.
Yeah,
but maybe not so many New Zealand listeners.
Then maybe we get sponsored by Audible. It turns out audible.com/poopcast.
Poopcast. That's your tag. No fun for zombie-like employees. What's the company? Game Loft.
Oh, we can't talk about this while Ben's not here to go, oh, that's totally normal.
Ah, yeah. I mean, he already stuck his oar in. The Parnell Company. Wow, so they're just around the corner from from Coughland, apparently. They're just around the corner from the studio here, which is in Parnell.
You should drop by and do a little bit of investigative reporting.
No. Okay. Not that interested. Some staff working for up to 36 hours at a stretch. The worst I've ever done, I think, must have been heading for 30 hours, but that was very unusual. I think that if you're working that many hours, the quality of your work must be very bad.
I've done a 26-hour day. It sucks to be in a job. You read that article and it's like, well, that's a bit silly why they're choosing to do that, but it sucks to be in a job where you're given the pressure of, you know, if you don't do this job, the thing doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, I used to be in a job where literally if I didn't stay late and work, work late to finish something, a top-rating television show wouldn't be on the television.
Right.
You know, and it's like, yeah, it sucks to be put in that position where you basically have to do it or it won't get done.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, and you, no matter how right you are in the fact that, look, I shouldn't still be working, I should go home and sleep, you don't also want to have the discussion about why you've, you know, failed in this thing and cost the company this much money, whether or not it's your fault.
Yeah. Game Loft, a French-owned company with about 70 staff working from its Parnell headquarters, makes games primarily for mobile phone devices based on movies like Avatar and Harry Potter. Watson, this is Glenn Watson who spoke to the Herald, Watson claims he worked up to 120 hours a week, which is a ridiculous amount, 120 hours a week, and his colleagues walked around like drained zombies. Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, I've been at places during crunch, and sometimes in my current job, I have to go into crunch, but I mean, I'm the only coder, And basically, if I go into crunch, it means I've probably failed somewhere down the line. But game developers particularly seem to use crunch instead of just hiring enough staff. It's a risky industry, though, game development. It can be very expensive to make a game. Very expensive. And a lot of them don't pay off.
Yeah, well...
The Department of Labor confirmed it had received a complaint. A spokesman said legislation did not stipulate the maximum number of hours an employee could work, but working excessive hours could lead to health and safety issues. A Gameloft employee who asked not to be named said a clause in their contract allowed for a, quote, reasonable amount of unpaid overtime.
See, that's another one of those things. It's like, yeah, well...
But, I mean, there's lots of... I mean, probably everyone's contract also probably says employees will do whatever is reasonably requested of them by management, which could include doing someone else's job, really. I mean, that's not necessarily unreasonable to say, hey, you go and operate the reception, you're the secretary today. Is that unreasonable? It would probably be unreasonable to say, no, fuck you.
There's a handy thing in, like, working in the film and television industry. Well, it doesn't really affect me much. People who work in crews. Mm. There's a thing called the Blue Book, which is the New Zealand Techo guilds, or it's basically the guild or union that deals with tech workers in the film and television industry, has this book called the Blue Book, which is they negotiate. It's their working guideline that they negotiate with the Producers Guild, Screen Production Direction or Directors Guild, and it sets out a few things, and among those things are minimum turnaround time and certain expectations for pay rates on overtime. And by and large, if you're working on, a production with a proper company, you can just assume that those rules will be followed. So, you won't work a longer than 10-hour day without specific, quite heavy overtime rates, and that you will get a minimum, I think it's a minimum 8-hour turnaround, might be 10-hour turnaround. So, no one's going to send you home at midnight and expect you to be back at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Which is, it kind of works in that industry, and it's the sort of thing that you don't get written into your contract. People don't get that. If you're a computer programmer, that's never going to be written into your contract, and there's nothing in the Employments Act about what are reasonable working hours.
Yeah,
which is a shame, because it's an expectation that I guess doesn't come up when you're accepting the job. You don't think that at some point it might be expected of me to work, ridiculous hours. I should discuss how this would work out.
Yeah.
So who knows?
I mean,
maybe there's a union they could join.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's right. But I mean, joining a union, what happens to the company? So I mean, some of these companies are tenuous. A game developers guild, which has all of these guidelines, probably sees some of this work outsourced, because it's already been outsourced to New Zealand, outsourced to somewhere with one step worse employee relations. It's a tough thing to do, isn't it, really? Next story, a pound of flesh, how Cisco's unmitigated gall derailed one man's life. We've been joined by the Sting Machine. Do you want to join the microphone? No? You're just going to have whatever you're drinking? All right, fair enough. Adake, what's his first name? Good question. Adake?
It doesn't matter. He doesn't need a first name.
Peter Alfred Adake. I don't know. He's from like Nigeria or somewhere. He's a British citizen. He was a Cisco employee, and he was some kind of engineer, and he became some kind of management guy. He moved up into Cisco's UK executive group and travelled around doing all sorts of work with the big clients, AT&T, WorldCom, Global Crossing, the huge Cisco clients who have massive installations of their hardware. And in 2003, Cisco moved him from Europe to the US, and he continued to be a really high performer. And then he decided that as a lot of high performers often do, to start his own company in Silicon Valley in 2005. And so he did that. Then he did something that Cisco didn't like. Somehow, through one of his former colleagues, he still had access to some kind of internal information.
at Cisco.
I think it was more than that, though, because at some point, before, I mean, the company he set up, it wasn't just any company. It was a company that provided network support for Cisco devices.
Yeah, that's right.
So I think probably the moment he started doing that, he probably annoyed Cisco.
Yeah.
Because they make a lot of, you know, they make money on selling the devices, but they make a lot of money on the back end and support contracts.
Yeah.
So undercutting them on a support contract is, you know, immediately, especially someone who's so familiar with the products.
That's right. But he did more than annoy them. Although, I mean, you would expect that, you know, for a rational person, that would only be an annoyance. Oh, this is someone trying to compete with us. So anyway, he moved back to Britain with this company, still operating this company. I guess it's an international company, although much vastly smaller than Cisco itself. Then he moved to Zurich. And then, for some reason, he decided that his company needed to sue Cisco because Cisco was forcing their customers, Cisco's customers, to buy maintenance contracts only from Cisco and not allowing Cisco hardware purchases to use Adake's company, Multiven, to maintain their gear. And so he decided to sue Cisco. It's a complicated story. Anyway, it ends up with him not being able to get into the States to go and, you know, do depositions or whatever. Cisco had an opportunity to go to Switzerland or Britain. But apparently it would be really difficult to do this deposition there because it is a case that is, they're being sued in the States, but they weren't being sued from the States. And because he couldn't get into the States, he couldn't do it in the States himself. So anyway, he ended up having to go to Canada. And what Cisco did was, during the deposition, in front of the judge hearing this case that he was taking against Cisco, they started extradition proceedings from the US to pull him out of Canada.
And well, they made accusations against him and got federal charges filed, and then they said he's in Canada and he might leave Canada soon, so you better get him over here quick.
That's right. But he was
the US
only
federal
in...
government started extradition.
But at Cisco's request.
Well, yes.
And so anyway, he was locked up in Canadian jail while this went through the courts.
To be fair, Canadian jail's a lot nicer than American jail, probably.
Probably nicer than most jails. Mm. Definitely nicer than American jails. Maybe nicer than New Zealand jails. Who knows? Probably better insulated. And they can still smoke there, I expect.
Mm.
Which might be important to some people. I don't know. But anyway, it took him like a year to clear his name. He was in jail, I think, for a month. But then he couldn't leave Canada, even though he lived in Zurich. He couldn't leave Canada for something like a year. But finally, it got to a sane judge who wasn't just being lied to by Cisco about, you know, the seriousness of his crimes.
Well, wasn't
if
it
he had
that,
been convicted...
I was reading this, and Cisco dropped the charges. Like, they came to a settlement.
Yeah.
With Multiven, and then they dropped the charges against him in relation to unauthorized access of their systems.
Yeah.
But despite the fact they dropped the charges, the extradition process
continued. Yeah, it continued. Yeah. But the charges were a bit trumped up in the first place. He was facing something like 500 years in jail for downloading some documents off them. Right? It doesn't seem like the punishment fits the crime.
Well, that's so often the case, isn't it?
Well, particularly when the US is involved. Yeah, complete madness. So this judge, in the end, who finally... now, what did he say? He had some pretty harsh words for old Cisco.
Well, and for the way it was handled by the RCMP and the US... I think it was a Secret Service that was... because it was, you know, something to do with Secret Service. It's more than just protecting the president for them. There's other stuff as well.
Yeah.
It's a strange story. While you finish looking it up.
Ended up being a $14,000 civil tort that they had set up. I mean, it was worth $14,000, the claim against him. And they had set it up to be worth 500 years in prison by you know, multiplying out. And hundreds of millions of dollars worth of damage, of course, by multiplying everything out so that, you know, everything was end-to-end rather than combined as it might more sanely be. And it finally gets to the British Columbia Supreme Court Justice Ronald McKinnon. And what did he say? He called Cisco duplicitous, basically.
Duplicitous, eh?
Yeah, duplicitous. He said that It is simply not done in a civilized jurisdiction that is bound by the rule of law for the police to interrupt a judicial proceeding, because he was essentially, Adike, was in court when the RCMP barged in and arrested him.
And the Cisco lawyers insisted on videotaping it.
That's exactly right, to maximally embarrass him. So, I mean, it's a really minor claim, $14,000. I mean, that's less than what's-her-name, Jamie Thomas, is ending up paying for her years of hassling through the courts. I don't think anyone has ever suggested, well, actually, the RIA may have suggested it, that she should spend 500 years in jail. I don't think that's ever happened. But so Justice McKinnon, the Supreme Court Justice, points out that Adike has no criminal record. He made every possible effort to comply with US immigration laws to travel in there. But because he dared to take on Cisco, he was rewarded with criminal charges that had been so grotesquely inflated as to make the average member of public blanch at the audacity of it. This is, I'm paraphrasing now, roughly.
I don't know if you are, those sound like the words from the article.
Yeah, but I'm skipping the odd word. So it's not really a quote. Sure. It's not really a quote if I'm skipping the odd word. And in his opinion, I'm going to start quoting properly now. In his opinion, the entire incident was a planned and deliberate act by Cisco with the collusion of the US prosecutors to transform a minor civil complaint into a criminal charge requiring 500 years imprisonment. And all the US had to do was let Adike into the country. This McKinnon says. But instead, astoundingly, they misled Canada into launching this incredibly expensive legal proceeding. Anyway, this is the sort of story that Discourse does really badly because there's so much detail and, you know, not talking about this.
A lot of intricacy and nuance.
That's right.
It's just the companies and their control of law and their manipulation of law, just it frustrates me. And I mentioned it before in the first part of the proper show about the This American Life podcast about patents. But yeah, it is just unbelievable. Like, you know, I'm reasonably aware of how patent law works and is abused in the software industry, but I had no idea it was this ridiculous. It's just fucked. And
I haven't actually listened to it.
You have to listen to it. If you don't, in fact, anyone who's listening, if you stop listening to this podcast right now, because it's just going to turn into talk of poos and nyan cats.
Yeah.
But if you just need to listen to This American Life, I can't remember the actual name of it. It's Patent something, right? It's got Patent in the title. Yeah. It's the most recent, as I speak now, the most recent This American Life podcast. It's stunningly good, and it's an amazing piece of journalism and just a really good piece on what the US patent system is, how it works, how it's being abused. Like, it's astonishing that, you know, they pointed out that one of the patent lawyers, and it pointed out there's a patent for toast. It was issued in 2005, basically. It's a patent for toast.
It seems like there'd have to be prior art in 2005.
It's like, well, there was another one, this particular patent that they were looking at about, I don't even know what it was about. It was basically about being able to upgrade software through an internet, you know, or through the internet, but also purchasing stuff. It was a really broad patent. And not only that, was basically the essential invention was covered in 5,000 patents. That it's practically impossible to do anything in software or you know, in large technology to do anything that isn't infringing on a patent.
Do you know what Disapproving Sheep has to say about toast patents?
I've got a fair idea. Oh, nailed it.
He doesn't like them. He doesn't like them at all.
It's shocking to me, and it shows how insanely broken the system is. And you listen to it, and you think, look, no sane person could listen to this and not go, well, this is fucked, it needs to be fixed. But you just know that there's no way it's going to be fixed because, you know, the sane people who listen to it and think that don't get any say in how these things work. Doesn't matter how they vote. The person they vote for is going to, you know, go to the big lobster dinners with the patent, you know, lobby people, and it doesn't. Nothing's going to change.
I saw something, and one of the reasons that this isn't going to change is that the lobbyist industry. I saw the return on investment of lobbyists, and it was something like 28,000%. So, I mean, basically, they've got an essentially blank check to pay off to grease the palms, to scratch the back, to gently cup the balls or boobs of politicians and decision makers and bureaucrats. And there's essentially no amount that is too much for them to spend and for it to be worth it.
See, and this is I mean, most of this applies to the US legal system and to US law. And it's not, New Zealand politics doesn't seem to be that polluted yet, although fuck, it gets close with things like the, you know, the TPPA agreement, which basically, you know, forces some US laws upon us.
Yeah.
Especially in this sort of respect.
Do you know what this approving sheet has to say about giving up our sovereignty for a free trade agreement? Yeah.
But it's shocking, but it doesn't matter that it's the US law, because it, you know, we may as well all be in the US in terms of these things. It doesn't fucking make a difference.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I could start a company and still get sued by a US patent holder. It doesn't matter. It's fucked. It's all just, it's,
yeah, it's tricky,
shocking.
Because we don't have software patents, but of course, if you, I mean, anyone who develops software has to probably look outside New Zealand if they want to make any real money.
Well,
and so immediately anyone that you trade with will have software patents.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is, so, you know, there's this battle going on between Google and Apple and Samsung and Apple and Samsung and, you know, about these, about patents relating to mobile phones.
Yeah.
And we're both, Apple and Samsung have appealed to the, I can't remember what it's called, Import Protection Authority or something like that, who are not a patent, you know, they're not a court,
yeah,
but they're a body that, a federal US body that decides when things should be disallowed from import, basically. So if Apple can convince this body that Samsung, the Samsung Galaxy phone or the Samsung Tab or whatever product it is breaking their patent and you know, causing them loss, then they can prevent it being imported into the States, because of course it's not made in the States, it's made in Taiwan or something.
Right.
So they won't be able to sell in the States anymore. And so then Samsung's doing the same thing to Apple.
Yeah.
Trying to get the iPhone banned. So that Apple wouldn't be able to bring iPhones into the States.
Well, good luck. Good luck with that, Samsung.
Oh, it's just and it's like this mutually assured destruction thing with patents. It's just like, how can we ever get any better where we are at technology when everyone's just fucking with each other?
Is it mutually assured destruction? I understand that Apple are currently making $500 million US dollars of profit every week.
Well,
they have approaching, I think, $80 billion US dollars in the bank that they can do whatever they want with. If it comes to mutually assured destruction, actually, they're pretty well shielded.
Yeah, no, then they just bought, was it 6,000 patents from, I want to say Nortel. This is in the patent thing from This American Life. Yeah. They just bought, so Nortel was a telecommunications company, I think it was Nortel, went out of business or went in receivership in the States. And as part of that, they had an auction for the patent portfolio from this company, which is 6,000 patents relating to telecommunications, probably, mostly. Maybe Toast as well. And Google tried to buy it, and Apple wanted to buy it. Google bid, I'm pulling numbers out of my ass, but I'm ballpark, I'm right. But Google basically bid about $4 billion for these six thousand patents.
Yeah.
Apple and a bunch of other companies, including Microsoft, ended up paying like $5.6 billion for these patents. And not because they wanted the technology in the patents, but because they wanted to have them both as a weapon and as a defense.
Yeah.
It's just, you have to listen to the podcast. It just made me angry.
Yeah, it makes me angry as well. Speaking of, because the patent stuff is meant to, you know, protect innovation, but it seems to me that actually what it does is stifle innovation. You know,
it absolutely does.
There's
no question about it.
Competition, and competition is what, you know, pushes this stuff on. I mean, the reality is that Apple didn't invent, you know, the touchscreen components in any of their devices. You know, another company innovated those and produces them. And so for Apple to have patents that require the use of devices that they don't produce, I mean, it just seems bizarre. You know, so Samsung can have the exact same screens in their devices.
Well, Samsung make the screens, right. You know, like this or some of the other components. You know, it's bizarre.
That's right. It is bizarre. So one thing that Apple have innovated, you know, they got their boffins working on things in the lab. And with OS X Lion, they've
got this amazing new invention, which, okay, tell which me more. Is now, you know, in Windows, yep, where you've got a window, or in OS X, yep, you've got a window and it has edges.
Yeah.
Now Apple have innovated this amazing new thing where whichever edge you drag, you can resize the window.
Wait, what?
Isn't that incredible? Yep, that's one of their new innovations. I bet they patented it. Even though, wow, Windows has had it since Windows 3.1.
Wow, imagine that.
Yep. And hey, have you looked at the launch pad? Have you looked at the launch pad? Looked at the launch pad? Yeah, it looks pretty much like a less functional Windows desktop. That's pretty much what it looks like. Also, have you noticed one of the other new innovations? Full screen.
Full wow, screen. Really?
Yep, that's one of the new innovations.
So, what, like filling the whole screen?
Yep. Yeah, wow. Isn't that amazing? Wow, the apps go full screen now. That's incredible. Well done, Apple. No one else would have ever thought of that. Everyone else thought of that.
It's funny because there's another thing. Like I've paid very little attention to OS X Lion because I don't have a Mac and I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But I've seen a bunch of people on Twitter say something about the scrolling has been changed or fixed. What,
it's been
do you
reversed.
Have any idea what the fuck's going on with that?
Yes, I know exactly what's going on with that. And that is so you've got a scroll wheel on your mouse.
I do.
So if you put your mouse over a long window,
yeah,
you will scroll your finger from top to bottom to make the page move up and down. But if you, and that makes sense if you look at the little grabby thing in the scroll bar on the right. That makes sense because you're scrolling that up and down. But if you actually look at the page that you're scrolling, it's going the wrong direction.
Right.
It's actually going the wrong direction. Right. And so this only makes sense with touch interfaces. So there's the new Magic Touch add-on for Apple desktops. And of course, most Apple users use laptops. So on the scroll pad, if you scroll a window, the previous way actually was wrong. And what they've done is they've actually changed it to be right.
Okay.
But it's optional. It's optional. It doesn't make much sense
to begin with. You know, I understand it. It wouldn't work with a mouse. It probably would work with a touchpad.
Yeah.
And it obviously definitely works with a touch device like an iPad or an Android phone.
That's right. And so what they've done is they've made the desktop experience the same as on the iOS devices. And I actually think it's consistent and it makes sense. And it's just going to be a really weird changeover period for a few people while it feels unintuitive. But it actually makes sense. Now, I haven't historically cared very much. But because as I mentioned earlier, kind of the only laptop in the world that I'm actually interested in happens to be an Apple. I kind of find myself now thinking about what my experience would actually be like if I started using OS X. Because historically, I don't like using OS X very much. I had a lovely big iMac on my desk at work, but I just never used it because I don't find the experience satisfying. But so anyway, I've been thinking about it a little bit more lately, and I'm not sure. I think probably I'd just install Windows 7 or something
good on the MacBook here.
Right. Right, exactly. But so anyway, I've been thinking about it a little bit more. So
I can't think right now. It's difficult because I occasionally talk to people about Macs and I say, I don't really like OS X, and they say, why? And I'm like, oh, God, I can't actually remember. There's like...
one thing is the whole approach to Windows where kind of the window in the application is kind of separate. So it's like GDI apps in Windows, but everything is like that. So... So like it's hard to explain to Apple users how weird it is coming from Windows, where kind of every application is sort of its window.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of self-contained. So, you know, I know that this is Chrome, and I know that that's VLC and that's Skype, because, I mean, the whole thing is wherever I've put them. And this is another innovation that Apple invented, window snapping. Hold down the window key and push the arrow at the... arrow keys, and you'll see that Windows has had that for a while, and it works just fine. And so, with the Skype window, if I clicked on that, that instead would have like a task, a status bar, a task bar at the top of the monitor, rather than on the window itself, and that doesn't make any sense to me.
I remember that's. I mean, to be fair, that's a paradigm that's come across since as far as I can ever remember using. Mac OS, it's always done that.
Yep, I know.
And I remember, it's one of those things, like having come from Windows and used a Mac, it's one of those things that makes no sense, and it so many times. There's always that thing on a Mac where you close all the windows and you're like, done, it's gone. But then you don't realize you haven't closed the window. You've just closed the visible part of the program. It's still there.
Yeah. And that's something that has actually changed now with Line. Now, I'm not completely au fait with all the details of this. But like closing apps now is more like the iOS experience. So because there's now like persistent states and kind of auto saving with anyway apps that have been updated, it kind of doesn't matter if you close things or how much you close them, or if they're, you know, looking at resources that, you know, some other app wants to use, because closing an app now doesn't really mean anything. Because when you start it again, it'll be exactly where it was. And so if you had started to, you know, write a note in whatever the equivalent of Notepad is, it doesn't matter if you save it or not. When you start it again, that half-finished note will be exactly where it was, even if you've rebooted your computer. And it goes even further than that, because now they've got file... There's some amazing stuff that they're doing with versioning and backups, actually. You've seen the Time Machine interface where you see like a star field view in the background, and you've got Windows kind of scrolling towards you like a deck of splayed out cards. Well, now kind of every single file that you create, well, maybe not giant video files, I don't know, will have versions as well. Now, I don't know how often it creates new versions, if like it's every key press or if it's, you know, some other separation. But you can go back through the versions of the text, you know, an ordinary simple little text document, and you can say revisions. So you can say, what was this text document like 2 weeks ago? But I mean, I think that the apps do need to support it, but it's not anything in particular that they need to do that's special.
No, it's just a core data kind of thing that they use.
That's exactly right, and I think that is brilliant. It is absolutely brilliant.
You know, I did my Final Cut Pro 10 rant a while ago. One of the features in Final Cut Pro 10 that they changed is you can't save a project anymore. There's simply no option to save.
Yeah, and I think that's a Lion thing. There's kind of no saving.
Yeah, so
now.
Obviously that, you know,
because in everything Final Cut is Pro always 10, saved.
As far as I can tell, and I haven't, I mean, I've touched Final Cut Pro 10. That's as far as I've gone. I haven't used it, and I don't have a Mac available to use it on, and it doesn't suit the type of work I do. But, you know, I talk to and listen to a lot of people who have used it, and one of the things about it is because you can't save, you know, like a lot of, you know, especially you're editing something complex like a video, you want to be able to play around with it and then go, actually, I didn't like that, I'd like to forget how I had it.
So you want to save versions. You don't just want to save, you want to be able to save as, then save as a different one, and then save as a different one.
Yeah, so you can do that. You can do this thing called clone a project, and you basically, because there is no concept of, you can't have multiple timelines in a single project anymore. A project is the timeline, or is the way you've built it. So you have to basically save copies of the projects. But it's constantly saving. Like, so it's always, in theory, it's always saving, and the idea is you could basically pull the power out and turn it back on again, and it would come back to where it was. Now, apparently that's not the case. What's happening is it's crashing, and people are losing hours of work at a time because it's not, for some reason, restoring the latest version of the file. And the other thing is there's no way to go, you know, there's no way to version it, which is, seems insane to me, because if it is a constant saving kind of versioning project, I can't understand why you couldn't, you know, essentially work in history. You know, you couldn't just go back to like, oh, I like this better how I had it. Like, it should just be like an infinite undo buffer.
Yeah.
Which is, there was a product called Pinnacle Liquid, which was a pro editing app, or moderately pro editing app, like not really used in much broadcast, but pretty popular among event videographers and things like that. It got bought by Avid, became Avid Liquid, and then got discontinued. So Avid fucks their customers off from time to time as well. But one of the features it had was that no save thing, and it's been doing it for years. And it literally was, as I understand, I never used it, but it literally was an infinite undo buffer. You could work on a project and then go, actually, no, I liked this better when it was, and you can basically scroll back to however you had it at any point. But you could also close the project and open the project again and undo what you'd done the last time you had it open.
I find that incredibly annoying, because what if I've just done 15 steps that I really like, but I want to take away 3 steps 18 steps ago?
Yeah. Well, I don't see it depends. It's so complicated, because, you know, everything to some extent, it's like the history brush in Photoshop. It sort of works and it sort of doesn't. You can kind of take a snapshot back from an older version of the history and then paint it back over itself, but it just seems weird to me that you can't, like, I would have expected in a thing like Final Cut Pro X, you should just go like, you'd be like, snapshot here, Yeah. And you could just always just jump back to that version of it, just
now,
if you had it there.
Now, the thing with Final Cut Pro 10 is that it was released in Snow Leopard, but clearly it was a Lion app. That no saving thing is a Lion thing. So maybe the thing with the versioning is now going to be available in Lion. I don't know. Have people been able to try that out already?
Well, what I've heard is it's not. It's apparently quite crashy in Snow Leopard,
yeah,
but not so crashy in Lion.
Yeah.
So and presumably other things will change as well.
But does the versioning work in Lion?
Well, I don't think it has the ability. I mean, it always does the constant saving. I don't think there's any ability to do. I mean, there might be at an operating system level, you might actually be able to go back and open the project up and actually, you know, as you can with other files, and go back to a certain earlier version. But
that doesn't seem very intuitive, or it doesn't seem like a nice creative experience.
Yeah.
To basically restore a backup.
I had this discussion, and it applies across the board to Apple, but it was specifically about Final Cut Pro 10, and it was with a creative person, you know, it was with an advertising guy. About Final Cut Pro 10, and he said, the thing I've always liked about OS X, and the reason that OS X will, you know, Macs will always be best in creative industries is because they, you know, they get rid of all the under the hood stuff and make it really easy.
Yeah.
And I sort of said that to some extent. Well, first of all, he said that, and then at the same time he said, but I think Final Cut Pro 10, you know, that Apple will just, you know, I think they've made a mistake, they've misjudged some stuff, and they'll come in and put all the pro features back in. And I said, well, what you're saying there, the two things you're saying there are conflicting with one another, because it was the pro features in Final Cut Pro 7 that made it difficult to use. That was the under-the-hood stuff. And that's what they've taken out. They've taken out all the complex stuff. But at the same time, it's that taking out the complex stuff that frustrates me the most about Apple in general. So OS X, Final Cut Pro 10, iOS, is that if I don't use something the way they want it to be used, I can't use it.
Yeah.
And that sort of, like, there was this thing when I was working as an IT guy recently, in the last, you know, in my most recent reincarnation, pre-incarnation, where the CEO or the managing director of the company or whatever got a MacBook Air, and I set up the MacBook Air with Bootcamp to dual boot, you know, Windows 7, which was then connected to the domain and had all the drives mounted and stuff, but she could also boot it into OS X if she wanted to do that. And in OS X, I tried to set it up so that the drive shares would work similarly. And I don't know if you've ever tried getting Windows drive shares to work on OS X. I mean,
I remember the first time I encountered them, it was absolutely horrible, because I was thinking of it as a peer network, but the way to connect to them was to use a file menu option that was connected to server that just is immediately unintuitive.
Yeah, no, and it is, and but like you can't, there isn't really a way, you know, like in Windows, on a Windows network, you find a drive share you want, you right click on it, you go map to drive, and you can pick whether or not it loads that again.
Yeah, I've got one here that VPNs through to the office.
Absolutely.
And it is beautiful and reliable.
Yeah, there wasn't really a way. There's like a bunch of workarounds to sort of how you can do that. You can write like an Apple script, login script that manually sets up the drive mounts or whatever. What I thought
writing
I could
a
do,
script is intuitive.
Well, what I thought I could do was, because OS X is just Unix, right? And it's got a, so, you know,
it's
if
BSD.
You look at the mount tab on OS X, you see, you know, dev SDA 1 or whatever the hard drive is mounted as slash and blah 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 is mounted as this and blah 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 is mounted as that. And you can do a UFS mount and it will mount as a drive and stuff like that. But you can't do it with a
SMB.
So there's a you know, the slash volumes, and the things in slash volumes are what shows up as the drives on the computer.
Yeah.
So I thought, I know, I will just make a mount point for that Windows drive. I'll set up a bash script or whatever that makes a mount point for that Windows drive and puts it in volumes, and then they'll show up as drives on the computer, which is what this person expects it to look like, because that's how it looks on Windows, and that's how, you know, and that's how we talk about these shares. We talk about them as drives and things like that. Can't do it. You put something in volumes that OS X hasn't put there, and it doesn't show up.
Right.
It just doesn't turn up on the GUI. That's one of the fundamental, like, you've built it on the power of Unix, but you've switched off a bunch of the stuff, or you've just chosen to ignore a bunch of the stuff that would make it awesome.
It seems tricky because, I mean, it seems like sometimes, you know, the default behavior in OS X is maybe not what, you know, maybe we can call them power users would like, that what, you know, proper geeks might like, but often it's possible to work around it. But then sometimes they make it actually
seemingly impossible without getting into some serious coding, without actually getting into, you know, writing scripts that really work around it. And it seems like that shouldn't be necessary. For something for something as simple as mounting a drive on the network, I mean, that is pretty basic. I mean, that's really basic in both. I mean, the operating systems I'm most familiar with day-to-day are Linux and Windows. And that is really simple in both of those.
Yeah. I don't know. The other thing, the whole OS X thing has shown to me, and then before that, things like Xserve and stuff. I was very seriously considering buying a MacBook Pro because
they're lovely.
Well, until a month ago, it was sensible in my line of work for me to have a copy of Final Cut Pro and a copy of Avid available for what I do.
Yeah,
you know, that would be sensible.
Avid runs on OS X.
Hey,
Avid runs on OS X.
Avid runs on OS X, and Avid also runs under Windows on a MacBook Pro.
Right. Oh, lovely.
So I could have it everywhere.
Right.
But obviously now, you know, I have no need for Final Cut Pro 10. I can't buy the old Final Cut Pro, and I'm not going to buy a MacBook Pro just to run Avid in OS X or on Windows on a MacBook Pro.
Right.
And not only that, I'm now, you know, not that I'm not a big Apple user, but I'm not going to buy anything that Apple makes because I just don't have faith in their interest in what my needs are.
Yeah.
So, not even specifically my needs, but, you know, they are very much, what do they say, skating ahead of the puck? I think that's right. Steve Jobs' expression for what, you know, where he sees Apple, what he sees Apple doing is going to where the future is.
Does he think he's Wayne Gretzky?
What's that?
He thinks he's Wayne Gretzky because that's kind of famously what old Gretzky did.
Yeah,
he went to where the puck was gonna be, not where it was.
And that's what Jobs says Apple's doing. And
some of their bets.
Right.
There's just no question that some of their bets have been like that. I mean, they were right that the floppy disk was going away. They didn't maybe handle the transition very well internally because, you know, they had no drive available immediately. But I mean, I think they were right about dropping the optical disc. And I am so sure about that, I actually beat them to it.
Yeah,
I didn't
totally.
Install
I mean,
one in my new machine.
I could totally live without it, without an optical drive. I don't know. It seems increasingly, a lot of the stuff just seems quite arbitrary now, and it seems to be getting more so. And the more they sell a bajillion iPhones and a bajillion iPads, the more it seems to me that they're going to be less interested in anything that doesn't have that same sort of sales potential. So that if they don't have, you know, just if they can't, if a product that they're interested in can't sell just a shit ton of items, of iterations, then they're just not going to bother.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I mean, look how well they've done with the iPad. How long has the iPad been out? 2 years?
I don't know.
And even now, even though, you know, the competition now have been kind of shown the way to do it, no one else is even really close to where the iPad is.
Yep.
And Apple sell as many as they can make.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's heaps that I've got an iPad, and there's heaps that annoys me about it, but,
Yeah, me too.
I don't
have one, but I used one briefly.
It doesn't seem to be matched.
I used one briefly here. I tried one out here in the studio. And I was incredibly frustrated by configuring it, but operating them, I mean, configuring it for, I had a decent key on my wireless. Terrible mistake. Oh, my God. Entering that key. God, it was painful. And no swipe. I really think iOS needs to get swipe because nothing is as good as swipe in my my experience.
There's another Android keyboard called Slide It, which is exactly the same idea. But it's been a while since I've used it, but I've heard a few people say it's better, and I liked it a lot when I had it. My memory is that it was better than Swipe.
Can you get it on the Motorola?
Hey,
can you get it on the Motorola?
You can. The Motorola Defy.
The Motorola
actually
Defy
comes with Swipe.
Kindly provided by Telecom XT, the network for what do they call themselves? The network for smartphones, I think. The smartphone network. Yeah, well, the network that works. Good old Telecom, eh? Thank you, Telecom.
I tell you what, I griped slightly to Rich about one Telecom issue I have, and that is occasionally, I get whatever it is, a gigabyte of data a month on my plan or something. But if I go over that, the bill becomes indecipherable. Every single IP data connection that is made is logged as a call, essentially. So I've got 9 pages.
Bloody hell.
Of IP data connections, and I have no idea how much data I've used.
What the fig?
Yeah, they need to sort that out. I think it's they've tried, you know, their billing system is obviously a certain sort of legacy, and they've had difficulty fitting this workflow into it or something. But it's just, like, it is literally indecipherable. I don't understand. Like, and I've got just 9 pages of line items that are like, you know, 41 cents, 30 cents, 28 cents, 57 cents. You know, and it's like times and durations, and it's just, I just don't understand it.
Well,
so that needs to change, but, you know, get a plan that you don't have. Oh, by the way, if you win one of the phones, we can hook you up. I'm sure we can hook you up with a prepay pack.
I'm sure we can. In fact, I'll buy one if I have to, but I'm sure.
No,
we can,
you don't have to. We'll make
I'm
it
sure
happen.
We can. I'm sure we can make that happen. My
in a car.
Yeah, we guarantee that we will provide a car.
Yeah, we'll make that happen too.
On my dirty old Vodafone connection, they've just released, actually not very long ago, an Android app for Vodafone that gives you at a glance view of your status, and I've used 11 megabytes of data.
I would love one of those on telecom.
16 days remaining.
There's a Your Telecom link in here, which takes me to a web page with that sort of information on it, but it's not, you know, it would be really nice to be able to have a widget. I would love
I've
to
sent
have
12 texts. I've used
that?
I've sent 12 texts and I've used 3 minutes of calls and my current balance is $38.46.
Well done.
Yep. There you go. Very it's a very simple app, and so I mean I think everyone should probably be able to beat this one from Vodafone just with slightly nicer styling, and I think you'd easily beat this one. Yeah.
I just want a widget to tell me how much data I've got left in the month. Because I don't even, you know, I don't know about you, but my billing cycle is, like, it starts on sometime in the middle of the month.
Yeah.
I don't even know when. So I have no idea, like, I have no idea how much data I've used.
Mine renews 12 August, 16 days remaining. The app tells me at a glance.
Yeah, I want that. So Telecom, when, if you're listening.
We love you. Please. We love you. We'll love you even more if you do this.
Yeah, make an Android app, please. You've got the information in your back end thingy with the what's it, so just push it out into an app, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, in fact, there's some people who make mobile apps in Parnell who'll probably get it cranked out for you in just a couple of nights.
Yeah, 70 staff working for only 72 hours, as far as we can tell, but they won't be unhappy about it.
No, they'll be fine.
I've changed my microphone to a standing orientation now. I hope the sound wasn't weird as I'm kind of adjusting my screens are in the wrong place.
In the upright position.
They are in the upright position, but they are now they feel far away.
My toes and fingers have gone numb because it's fucking cold in my little studio. I say studio, I mean office full of shit.
Well. As it happens, that might mean it's a good time for us to close out this very first extra large, extra long XL episode of Discourse Weekly Show, because we've actually, I think, just cracked over the 1 hour mark on the XL.
The XL, extra, extra large. I'm just going to scan the thingy and see if there's anything else I wanted to hear you talk about.
27 no. Club, Robert Pattinson, Tasers, Google Plus.
No, vacation.
MacBook Air. Internet changes. Oh,
I wanted to ask Ben a bit more about Orc, because I know he tested the Orc on what's the thingy.
I can probably tell you what he said about it.
Yeah, you can read his website.
It worked really well, and he liked that the voicemail was emailed to him in a tiny little WAV file.
Oh, I like that. That's cool. Yeah, that's neat.
And basically what it amounts to is it's a DSL router with a VoIP phone attached. He can use his the same decked handset that he already had, he can pair that with the Genius base station.
Oh,
so if you've already got a decked
news.
Phone, then you can pair it up, apparently. Mm. Or he was able to with whatever model he was using. And the price is very hard to beat. You get more data and for free, really, essentially. You might pay, in fact, quite a bit less. I mean, a lot of people were talking on Twitter about saving, you know, $50 a month.
Well, I mean, I think I pay for 30 gigs at the moment, which is what you get on the $70 plan, isn't it? I think, is it?
I'm not sure. I'm not
on
sure.
On Orcon for $30 for 30 gigs a month, I currently pay, I think it's $105.
Yeah.
As opposed to 70 that I could pay for the same amount of data. And the only problem is I have phones upstairs and phones downstairs, and just about making them all work. So whether or not because the other, you know, even if I can pair the decked headsets, whether the range is good enough. But I've got to check my phone wiring and see if, because they have a thing called I can't even remember what it's called. They have a service basically you can have the Chorus installer come out and, you know, reroute your phone line, so essentially all the jacks in your house come off the back of your router.
All right, I've just fired up the Orcon Android app, and it is downloading all my data. There's an Android app.
It'll go great on my telecom phone.
It'd be nice if it would show more information than it's showing. All it's really showing is usage this month. Can it give me more information?
Well, if you need to get your balance, you could just ask on Twitter.
So I have Purple Plus, apparently. 25. Yeah, I know, man. That was... people went mental about that.
Which one is it? Is it the official Orcon one, or is it the Orcon usage widget by Tim Boobier? I like that name.
It's not a widget, and it's from Orcon. It's the official app.
There's an Orcon usage widget which has a greater number of stars.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, I didn't want a widget.
Well, there you go.
So I get 25 gigabytes with my plan, and I pay friggin'... Well, I've also got a 50 gigabyte add-on, so I guess 75 ultimately, but the base plan is 25 gigs.
Yeah, I've got a 5 gig plan, and I add on 25 to get 30, and that's $105 or something.
So what do you buy at the supermarket?
I haven't spoken about
what old Food Town have been emailing me in a long time, because Ben would always get angry if I started talking about it. Where's my Gmail? This seems like
not my Orcon password.
This first Excel.
What's my password?
I don't know.
Is it boobies? It's not boobies. I'm just making that up. Don't try.
We're not live. You'd have time to change it. Auckland City Countdown, 5,797 specials.
Shit.
People are going to get angry if I do this.
Password.
Let's see. What have they got? Oh, it looks pretty good. Yep, there's no meat.
Nuts. How am I going to find out my password?
Strawberry Primo. Some bread. Sour cream. And several kinds of wine, actually. Perfect. All right, let's kill this show.
Yep, done.
Thank you, listeners. We love you. Thank you for listening to this very special first episode of the XL. I hope you liked the more structured discourse that went before it.
It'll be interesting to see how many people listen to this versus the main show, whether they do carry on into the next thing.
That is an interesting point. I wonder what Feedburner will tell me.
Feedburner
sucks, man. God, I hate Feedburner so much. Yeah, there's a lot of experimentation going on with this. Let's see which of these is working.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
Yep, that's right. You are, you were, you have been. I love you so much.
You're all right.
Fish and chaps.
This show is cancelled. Beep.
I just thought I'd drop in and say, I don't even know what you're talking about. What's this voicemail thing? I don't know what that is. Is that where people send you a letter but they have a nasty tone in their writing? Is that where they use a red pen? Is that voicemail? Hate mail? I get a lot of hate mail, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, that's it.